Good morning. We are up to the 25th chapter, Perek Chaf Hey, in Shmuel Aleph. We're going to begin with Pasuk Yud, actually maybe even with Pasuk Tes, on page 162. But before we do, let's discuss exactly what's happening so far in this Perek. We have the very beginning of the Perek, which tells us V'yama Shmuel, that Shmuel dies, and all the Jewish people are gathered together to pay tribute and to eulogize, give a hesped for Shmuel. Everyone, that is, except for one person by the name of Naval. Naval, which some interpret means that he is like a nevela, or he's manuvel, he's disgusting. As he was a very wealthy and powerful man, he was so focused on his wealth and on his sheep that he was about to shear, which would make him lots of money, that he completely was parishman at Sibor. He separated from rest of Klal Yisrael in order to do so. So makes him a manuvel, a disgusting person, who at the time of the loss of a tzaddik, all he can think about is his own personal gain, his own personal wealth. Nonetheless, we do find that David, even though he was on the run, Shaul still trying to kill him, he is starving to death. And now is the opportunity for him to turn to Naval and ask him, beg for him, to give him something to eat. And he sent some messengers and basically told him that, you know, listen, we helped you, I helped your shepherds, we didn't embarrass them, we provided for them when they were in need. So now that I'm in need, could you do me a favor and help me out? So let's begin with Pasuk Tes. V'yavo Nari David V'yadabru El Naval. It's interesting that when David sends them out, Pasuk tells us they're called Nari David. The lads, the attendants, is a nice, respectful way that he spoke about the people that served him. V'yadabru El Naval K'chol Devar Mo'elo B'Shem David V'yanuchu. They said exactly what David asked them to say. V'yanuchu, and Rashi, as we saw before, says that they stopped. That's all they said. They didn't add anything. They didn't give their own commentary. They said exactly what David wanted them to say. No more, no less. Now listen to how Naval responds. V'yan Naval as Avdei David. Interesting that they're the same people, but Naval, who was manuvel, even the way that he spoke, he called the Nari David Avadim, a bunch of slaves, a bunch of nobodies. And he said as follows, V'yomer, mi David, umi ben Yishai. Who is this David character? Who is ben Yishai, speaking in a disrespectful manner? Hayom rabu Avadim. Today, there are so many slaves. Hamis partsim ish mipnei Adonav. Hamis partsim, we saw in the Mesudas Sion, says in Inyan, his chaskus, that these slaves are rebelling against their masters. They're trying to get strong over their master. I'm the master. I am powerful. I'm great. And David is like a nobody. He is like you guys, a bunch of avadim, a bunch of slaves, begging for food, begging for some change. I'm going to give him absolutely nothing. After all, me, David, who is this David? I don't even know who he is. Which is kind of strange, because certainly Naval did know who David was. They certainly did have a relationship before this. So how could he have the audacity just to pretend as though he didn't even know who David was? So if we look over here in Rashi, Rashi tells us in Pasuk Yud, he certainly did know who David was. But when he said, me David, Rashi says, Mahu choshev she'etin lo ashli. I know who he is, but why should I give him? He's a nobody. Why should I give to this David? Who does he think he is? And then Rashi throws something unbelievable, and he says, "Halo merus hamawaviapa." After all, he comes from not the greatest background either. He comes from Rus the Moabite. Who knows that he should even be destined to be a king? After all, someone who comes from Moab. The only reason why Boaz could possibly have married her was because of this drusha of Moavi, Vula Moavis, so he was allowed to find a loophole to marry her. But certainly, this guy's not worthy of being a king. I'm not going to help him. I'm going to give him nothing. We're going to go back to that Rashi a little later on to see really what was bothering Naval and what was really going on behind the scenes over here. Let's move on to Pasuk Yud Beis. Pasuk Yud Beis tells us, "Vayahavchu nare David ledarkam." It says that the servants who were insulted, I shouldn't call them servants, that's what Naval called them, I should call them the Nare David. They turned around, and that's in fact what the Pasuk says. They were Nare David, because Naval was a name caller. They were really not Avadim, they were not Avdi David, they were Nare David. Vayahavchu, they turned around. They very easily could have snapped back at him. What do they have to lose? They're not going to get any food anyway, so they can maybe give him a little a curse, just say something back right at him. They said nothing. They just turned around, which again shows the greatness of what type of messengers that they were. Not only when they initially said David's words, they added nothing, they missed nothing, they said exactly what David wanted them to say. So too, when he said no, he didn't. Nari David didn't respond with their own commentary. Some people explain, just like Moshe Rabbeinu, that when Moshe Rabbeinu, he also turned his back. When he turned his back from Paro in Mitzrayim, he was hoping that possibly this would be a way to incite the king, and possibly even get him to do tshuva, to change his mind. Because, after all, maybe Paro, as well as Naval, were just trying to get a rise out of these people and to see their reaction. So when you turn your back as though to say, I'm not affected by what you have to say, that in itself could have caused Naval maybe to have changed, but unfortunately, he does not. So what did they do? They went to David, these trusted servants, and they went, these attendants, and they went to David and told him exactly what had transpired in the household of Naval. Pasuk Yud Gimel. But Yomer David L'Andashav. Now David, you can imagine, I would be furious if I was David. If I was a powerful man like David, I would say, okay, he doesn't want to give me food? Guess what? I'm going to kill him. I'm not going to tolerate this. This is unacceptable behavior. And this is what it sounds like on the simple reading of this Pasuk Yud Gimel. That David said to his men, Chigru ish escharbo, v'yachru ish escharbo, v'yachru gam David escharbo. David said, get your swords. Get your sword. And they did. And then David got his sword. They're ready to kill. They're angry. V'yalu achri David ki arba meos ish, u'masayim yeshuvu al hakelim. 400 people, very interesting, similar to when Esav was going to chase Yaakov. He also went after him with approximately 400 men. And then the Pasuk says, Umasayim Yeshuvo Al HaKalim, that there were 200 people that still held on, that stayed by the camp. Now the question is, if you really wanted to do some damage, why did he allow 200 people just to get off the hook and be in the National Reserve? So Rashi tells us, Al HaKalim, the reason why he had the 200 to stay is Lishmor Olehem V'Kolehem, in order they should guard the forts, that no one should invade, no one should steal any of their property while they're gone. So this way he had a significant amount of people to be able to guard their home front. And then he took with him Arba Meos Ish, approximately 400 people in order to kill them. Again, it sounds like David's blood is boiling, he's angry, he's furious, and he's ready to kill. Let's look in actually now at the first Rashi, which shows us that really that's not the case whatsoever. Rashi says, V'yachor gam David escharbo, mikan, we went out from here, shemaschilin bedini nefashos minakatanim bedin chil. Quoting the Gemara in Sanhedrin, on Daf Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, that when it comes to capital offenses, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to have the Ketanim, the people who are less dignified, with less experience and less abilities, they should be involved in the court case first. Let them give over and possibly render a decision. And then the older people, or the more knowledgeable, more experienced people, will do so afterwards. And they interpret this based on the Pasuk. It says, V'yachar ish escharbo, that first they grabbed hold of their swords, and then V'yachar gam David escharbo, then David grabbed his sword afterwards. David, obviously, the more experienced and more knowledgeable individual, he was the one who did it last. The question is, why? Wouldn't it make more sense that the first person you would, instead of going through all this red tape, asking people that don't really know what they're talking about, ask the most knowledgeable person, and then we'll be finished with the matter? So the Radak beautifully explains the logic and why this is done. And he quotes, of course, the same Gemara as Rashi does, but the Radak says as follows, Rabbeinu Zichrono Livracha Lamnu Mizeh, our rabbis of blessed memory learn out from here, Shedini Nefashos Ein Maschilin Min HaGadol, we do not begin by asking the greatest person in the court, but din nefashos don oso im chavero v'eskimu ki morid b'malchus. The question is, what did Nabal do? So someone's begging for some change in front of a restaurant, and you walk by him, so there's a capital offense. It's a mitzvah tzedakah, a mitzvah being a goymel chesed. So Nabal wasn't the kindest person in the world. So why does he deserve to be killed? Why would he be grabbing his swords? And the reason is, he didn't just grab the sword because Nabal didn't give food. He was also morid b'malchus. He rebelled against the throne. What do you mean? Who's the king over here? Because we know when it comes to being morid b'malchus, says the Radak v'chai misa, that's a capital offense. There's nothing to talk about. If you're morid b'malchus, which is exactly what Shaul thought about David, that the reason why Shaul rationalized, albeit incorrectly in his mind, that he had the right to kill David was because he felt that David was being morid b'malchus, he was rebelling against the throne. So over here, David also felt maybe Nabal was also rebelling against David himself. Ki kvar yadu kol Yisrael ki David nimshach l'melech. The Radak says that everyone already knew that David was anointed to be the next king. He would definitely be king number two. And what did Nabal do? It wasn't just what he did, but it's also what he said. And what did Nabal say? Vikaru Evid. He called David a slave, as we saw previously in Pasuk Yud. She'im hoya hu omer daita b'rishona ha'cherim lo hoya rotsim l'chalik alav.
The
Radak explains beautifully that we have to first ask the less knowledgeable people. Because if you would ask David, or a very knowledgeable person, the most knowledgeable person based in, who am I, a nobody, to contradict him, or to say something other than his psak? Possibly what I have to say may carry some weight, it might be true, it may be logical. But I'm not going to speak. And therefore, the proper method when it comes to court cases is that the person who has the less knowledge is the one who's asked first. And then afterwards, that may potentially be the correct answer. Something which even the most knowledgeable, experienced person may not have even have thought. And therefore, when it says that they grabbed hold of their swords, it doesn't mean that they literally grabbed hold of their swords in violence, but they grabbed hold of their, so to speak, swords of deliberation, of speaking, and fighting in court of, to one another to decide whether or not Nabal, in fact, was morid b'malchus. You can also logically think about it and say, David was the one who was insulted the most. And since David was the one who was insulted, maybe he should not be the first one to speak up. Because he certainly would want to believe he was morid b'malchus the way he spoke, calling him a slave, calling him a piece of garbage. And therefore, it's more logical that David should wait, as the Pasuk says, that only afterwards, v'yachor gam David escharbo. Now it's interesting that you would think a person whose life is constantly in danger, the very powerful King Shaul is running after you, no expense, with a huge army to kill you, you would think the last thing on David's mind is to have to worry about some guy by the name of Nabal. Okay, I tried my best. I was hoping he'd give me food. He didn't. All right, I'll move on to another place. Why is he so concerned about what is happening to the extent that now he's going to make himself vulnerable and he's going to start chasing and fighting a war? Maybe Shaul will hear about this and then he'll be able to spot David and he'll be killed on the battlefield. So it's brought down by the Be'er Moshe, a beautiful explanation which is found on page 163. He says that at that time, David and his followers were hunting and hungry, in constant danger from Shaul, and frequently betrayed by their fellow Jews, even by the fellow tribesmen of Judah. So why would they be so worried about Nabal? He says like this, The Bar Moshe says that he considered himself, that Naval considered himself to be one who should have been the next king. Everyone knew that Shaul's time as Melech was limited. There's only a few more days, another week, or maybe a year or two. Eventually, there'll be another king in town. And the question, who would be that next king? Naval, who was a very affluent person, he himself was so arrogant to believe, I will be the next king. And therefore, when David was asking him for food, and he said, meet David. And he said, this guy comes from, if you remember in Rashi, that he comes from Rus HaMoaviyah. He wasn't just saying who he came from, but he was saying that he is unqualified to be a king. He doesn't deserve to be the Melech. I deserve to be the king. And therefore, beautifully explains the Bar Moshe, this is truly being more than Malchus. It's not just you making fun of the leader, making fun of the king. All you have to do is go on the radio, and we hear about that, how people are constantly making fun of their politicians. But for a person to step up and say, you, David, are not the king, I'm going to be the king, that's more than Malchus. That's a true threat to the throne of David. And therefore, for this reason, explains the Bar Moshe, David and his 400 men gather their forces to attack and kill Naval. Well, anyone who knows what we've been studying until now, you would have to believe that the next psukim are going to clearly show Naval will be killed. There's no way that he'll be able to be defeat David. David, who somehow, with Hashem's help, was able to wipe away and kill the powerful giant Goliath. There's no way Naval is going to win this war. He's as good as dead. However, fortunately for him, there is one person that was on his side. And it was not a man, but rather it was a woman, by the name of Abigail, who was his wife. Pasuk Yudal. Abigail Eshes Naval, Higid Nar Echad Mehanorim Lemor. There was a young man among the attendants that told Abigail, who apparently was not there when her husband spoke so negatively about the powerful man David. And this is what message was given over to Abigail. Hinei shalach David malachim mehamidbar. Said, you know that David sent messengers from the midbar. They're in the middle of the desert. They were starving to death. They're dying of thirst. Levorech es Adonenu v'yoat bahem. And they're now going to greet our master, and he drove them off. And the Mesudas Sion says, Inyan hafrocha, that he kind of just kicked them and jumped and pushed them away. That he obviously angered these people. And these people didn't do anything wrong. They deserved a little bit of appreciation. After all, Pasuk Tesvav, V'anashim tovim onu ma'od, they were so nice to us. They never shamed, we were never embarrassed because we were not doing well at that time, even though we're doing well now. We're never lacking anything, as the Mesudas Sion Pukanu explains, is the Lashon of Inyan Chisaron. We're never missing anything. Kol Yemei, all of our days, Hisalachnu Itam. Whenever we were traveling with David and his people, Biosenu Basada, that when we were in the field, everything was going well, and they were so nice, and they did everything that a person could ever hope for. And not only did they give us and make sure that our animals were protected, they were like a wall, a protective wall over us, not just a few hours a day or 9 to 5, gam yomam was day and night. They were constantly protecting us. Kol yemei heyoseinu imam roim hatzon. Whenever we were involved in with the sheep, they were there to help us out. V'yatan now. De'iri should know, see, matasi, what is going on and what we should do. Ki kol sahara el adonenu v'al kol beso. You should know that what will end up happening is there'll be a terrible decree that's going to fall upon our master and our entire household. Everything is going to be destroyed. They are coming with a huge army. I was told it's around 400 people with a powerful man, David. They're all armed with sharp swords. We're dead. So why are we just sitting here and allowing your husband to do this to us? We have to do something to somehow appease David and give them some food. After all, they're starving, and look at all the things that they did. And the pasuk ends and says, "V'hu ben Belial midaber elav." And this guy, Naval, I can't even speak to him. He's a Belial. He's a base person, someone that's unwilling to even listen. What is a ben Belial? So the Mesuna Sion translates it as an ish Russia, a wicked man, bli ol makom. And don't forget, this is a servant speaking to the wife of Naval. But it was a known thing. He was a ben Belial. And Rashi says a little differently, v'adoneinu ben Belial, mios dovrei lav, mashani omelecha, ki yiksov aleinu. He's going to be someone who constantly is going to get angry anyway. He's not going to listen to us. It's going to be completely a waste. And therefore, please, do whatever you can to make sure that David will have something to eat. Because otherwise, he's going to come with guns a-blazing, coming after us, and we're as good as dead. And one could possibly say, how could he speak this way to Abigail? I mean, after all, it is his wife. Naval would probably hear about this, and this guy's as good as dead. So one could possibly say that, what do I have to lose? Okay, fine, Naval's going to kill me, so what? Tomorrow David's going to kill me anyway. So I'm going to call him a ben Belial, because that's what I think of him. I never said it before, but now I'm going to say it. It's also possible that everyone knew that this was just who he was. And therefore, because of that, even Abigail understood that this was her husband's personality. The Radak gives us another interpretation, and he says as follows. He says that when it says Ben Belial, he wasn't speaking about Naval. He was calling David, the servant was calling David a Ben Belial. Kolomer David Ben Belial midaber ladoneinu al hadaber hazeh el yavo v'yichla hakol im chelov. It's too late. Don't think that, all right, let's wait till David comes and then we'll try to appease him. If we wait until he comes, it's going to be too late. He is going to wipe us out. He's going to wipe us off the face of the earth. And therefore, because of this, please, let's do whatever we can now to intervene so hopefully we can appease David and that we're not going to die. Let's continue now with the next pasuk. Pasuk Yud Ches. Vatimaher Avigail. Avigail didn't sit and think and deliberate. She did quickly. She jumped up. Vatikach Mosaim Lechem, and she took 200 breads. Ushnaim Nivleyain. Interesting, the word Nivle is the same as her husband's name, Naval. 2 containers of wine. Vichamish Son Asuyos, and 5 sheep, which were asuyos, which are completely prepared, as the Masuda Sion says, Mesukanos, Mubushalos, they were cooked, and they were ready to go, so this way David, who's starving, and his men, they wouldn't have to spend time marinating or whatnot, it would be ready to be eaten. Plus it continues and says what else she brought, V'chamesh Si'im Kali, 5 measures, 5 saw of Kali, which is grain, as the Masudas Sion says, Kemach Meshubalam Suluyos, it was roasted. Umeya Simukim, 100 raisins. Umasaim Devalim, and 100 cakes of pressed figs. The Tosim Al Chamarim, and all these things were placed on the donkey. So she gave a lot of nice food, some good bread, some meat. So why 100 raisins? So Mesuda Sion says that's not what it means, but rather it means Mea Ashkulos Anavim Yevashim. It's 100 clusters of dry grapes, and of course dry grapes are raisins. If we look in the Radak, the Velim, which is kind of how we translated it, it's not just figs, but Hadvelahu Kikar Te'enim Yevashos, these are dried figs, Derusos Yachad, that are pressed into one another, Achinasis Kamo Kikar Lechem, as though it looks like bread. So this is all the food that she provided for David. Hopefully this would be enough to somehow appease him. Pasuk Yud Tes. Vatomer L'Nareha, so she turned to the servants and said, Ivra L'Fonai, go in front of me. Don't even go with me. I need to go personally to appease David, but I want you to bring this food in front of him, so this way it'll kind of prepare him and ease his mind, and this way when I speak to him, he won't be completely shocked what I'm trying to accomplish. Which is also what Yaakov did with his brother Esav, that he first sent just like the 400 men. Another interesting connection is that Esav, who was coming to kill Yaakov, so Yaakov sent messengers, and he gave them a lot of different gifts to hopefully the time when Esav would and Yaakov would encounter one another, that they would, that Esav would not want to kill him, which is probably the same logic of Abigail here as well. So the Pasuk says that she said to them, go in front of me, hineni acharechem, and I'll go behind you. But go. Sometimes it's important not to keep secrets from your husband, but this is probably a good secret not to tell Naval. The Pasuk says, Isha Naval lo higida. Certainly she did not tell her husband of what she was doing. Pasuk tells us, Vahaya he rocheves al chamor. So after the gifts were sent in front of her, now here Abigail is, she's riding on the donkey, but Yoredes B'Seser Hahar, we're going to explain this in greater detail in the Gemara Megillah, how we'll end the class today, but simply put, it says that she was going down the mountain in a hidden manner. Like, what does that mean? We'll see one explanation in a moment in the Radak. V'hine David v'anoshev yardim l'krasa. And David and his men were ready to kill Naval and his group. They were also going, in the basic vicinity. V'tifkosh osam. And they encountered one another. Abigail and David met for the very first time. So we look over here in the Radak. The Radak tells us, what is it coming to tell us? B'seser ahar, yoredes l'sad zem in ahar, shayim makam seser with bayim, yardim esad ha'echad. That means that she was in a certain crevice in the mountain that was not visible to anyone who was around her. The Amr Zed, the reason why the Pasuk is telling us this, like what's so important about this small detail, bavur kilo ra'asa he david merachok. She didn't know that David was coming from far away and that she was going to prepare for hours seeing him slowly, slowly come up. But rather, she chanced upon him and they just bumped into one another without much preparation, because that's the reason why the Pasuk says it was B'Seser. So it was not with much preparation seeing David coming or David seeing her come, but rather the way that the land was structured was that they kind of encountered one another accidentally in without much preparation. Pasuk Chaval. Okay, we're going to get back to that those words B'Seser Ahar in a moment. Let's just conclude with these next two psukim. The David Omar, and David in the meantime, before he encountered Abigail, which also implies, so we're going to see in this pasuk, that he did not yet receive any of the food. He felt that he wasted his time helping Naval. Ach l'sheker shamarti. It was l'sheker. Sheker means a lie or false. Masuda Sion translated as Ratzalamar Alchina. It was for nothing. It was a waste of my time to have helped this guy out. As Kol Asher L'Zeb Amidbar, everything that I did for him in the wilderness, V'nifgad mi Kol Asher Lom Uma. Again, for some reason, Masuda Sion keeps translating this word. Lo nechsar. It was not missing from Naval and his sheep, his flock, a thing. I was so nice to him. And you know how he paid me back? Vayashev li ra'a tachas tova. He gave me bad for the good that I gave him. It was a complete waste of my time. It was worthless that I should have given him all the time that I did. Because after all, look how he repays me, not giving me a single thing. And now is his day to die. Ko yasa elokim l'oyme David v'chol Yosef im ashem yiko asher lo ad haboker mashtin bekir. Such shall Hashem do to David's enemies, and such shall he do further. If I leave over until morning of all that belongs to him, so much as a dog, I will leave nothing behind. I'm going to destroy him. I'm going to wipe out every single thing that belongs to him. Now the interesting thing, which we're not going to dwell on because it's a little graphic, is that there's no word in this pasuk Kelev. Doesn't say dog. But Mashin Bekir is translated, generally speaking, certainly in this context, as a dog. And the reason for this is Rashi gives two answers. We'll do the more graphic one first, and maybe the second one will remain implanted in your mind. Mashin Bekir, the second explanation, Davar Achar Rashi, Afil Kelev Shedarko L'Hashin Bekir. Dogs, apparently, are not the cleanest of animals, and the way they would relieve themselves was on a wall. So he said, I wouldn't even leave a dog behind. I'd leave nothing. I can guarantee you that this is his last day and everything that remains. Mashin Lekir also is brought down as Kiros Libo, the innermost feelings in one's heart, that one whose emotions resonate against the walls of his heart. And therefore the term refers to the human beings, the people in Naval's group. That any person who's Kiros Libo, I'm going to be wiping them out. So either way you look at it, David is furious. But behind the scenes, Beseser, the Gemara tells us what also happened. And this is how we're going to conclude with the Gemara in Megillah on Daf Yud Daled Amud Aleph. The Pasuk says, V'hoya hirocheves al chamor, I'm reading from the Gemara, she was riding on her donkey, Abigail was, and she went down Beseser Ahar. The question is, why do we need to know this important, seemingly unimportant detail? So the Gemara says as follows, Omar Rabba Bar Shmuel al iski dam haba min hasarim notlu dam bar asalo. Very strange. On the surface, we're not going to understand what this Gemara is going to say, but it will eventually make a lot of sense. That Abigail knew that David was very knowledgeable in all halachos, also in the laws of Taras HaMishpacha, the laws of Nida. And therefore, when she asked him a question, even though we don't see this in these psukim, she asked him a halachic question, which is beseser, a very sneas, a modest, hidden question, or something in which no one really discusses, except to their rabbi, or someone that they would entrust such a very hidden beseser question. And what was that question? She showed him some form of dam, and she wanted to know if that which she saw would constitute her being tamei, impure, and therefore she would be in nida. So the Gemara then says that David was shocked at her question, because the time of the day was night. It was pitch black out. And he asked her the question. He said, you know, Abigail, I'm very surprised at you. How could you be so such a lack of knowledge? After all, v'chi marin dam b'layla. Do we actually do marin dam? If someone would ask me a shayla, that I should look and examine a bedika cloth, I'm not going to do it at night. I don't have the ability to see properly. Even though I may have a light, I might have a candle, but it's not enough to really give an accurate psak. And you should know that. Abigail, I'm very, very disappointed. You should know better than to ask such a question. After all, such questions cannot be rendered at night. So Amr Lo, says the Gemara, that she turned to David and said, you're right. But you know what? There's something else you're not allowed to do at night. Do you have a right to paskin on my husband that he deserves to die? It's nighttime, and the Beis Dins are not in session at night. Once it's dark, they go home, and there's no more Beis Din. They're not allowed to reach a verdict at night. And yet when it came to my husband, we clearly see that you were able to render such a verdict. So I wanted, beautiful, the Gemara does, is she was bringing out and assisting David in understanding his mistake by first giving him something, a shayla, the seser, which is hidden, but can only be done during the day. And she gave it to him at night. David then understood that he was wrong. He had no right to kill Naval. And Abigail was doing this to spare, of course, her husband's life. But David isn't satisfied with that. The Gemara says, the Omelah, he turned to her and said, what do you mean? Mord b'malchusu. This is not a case, a typical case of a beis din, a Jewish court that decides, listen to witnesses, are there enough witnesses, did the gloves fit? No. When it comes to mord b'malchus, there's no beis din. And the beis din doesn't need to render a decision. The king has the right to say, off with your head. And if he says off with your head because you're rebellious, it doesn't make a difference if it's in the middle of the day or it's in the middle of the night. And therefore, your husband is mord b'malchus, and that's why I'm killing him even though it's the middle of the night. And Abigail concluded, as will we, and she looked at David and said, no, a dying sha'ol kayim. David, you're right. What my husband did, if it would have been to a king, and when you will be a king, he would deserve to die being mord b'malchus. But he's not mord b'malchus. Mord b'malchus is only translated in the second word if there's a melech. I know you will be the king, but you're not the king yet. And since you're not the king yet, you have no right to decide that my husband should die at night without the day to be able to render that decision. And therefore, you should spare my husband's life. And the Gemara says, Omelei, that David turned to her and said, Baruch ta'amcha bruchat. You are blessed, and you are blessed with your reasoning. In fact, you're correct. Even though I know that I will be the king, and your husband wanted to be the king, but I'm not the king yet. And therefore, your husband is not mord b'malchus, and therefore, I do not have the right to kill him. I'm going to listen to you, Abigail. And as we will see, as the Pesukim will continue next week, what will unfold next.